it's weird when your identity is gamified. Like, I feel like that was a lot of my experience growing up. And then I can explain myself and people be like, oh, I see that. Or people will be like, I don't see it. And I'm like, well, it's what I am. You know, I think it's been a reckoning for me to just own who I am and not apologize and not ask for permission.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Tuckered Out with me, Ami Tucker. Guys, we are going to Broadway. I had such a fun interview today. Look, it's not very often I get to speak with two leads in a very beloved Broadway show. Michael Malaikel and Sonia Balsara, who play Aladdin and Jasmine in Disney's Aladdin on Broadway, join me today to talk about it all. We talk about South Asian representation, what working on Broadway has really meant to them, and they also share some super fun behind-the-scenes stories. Michael made his Broadway debut with Aladdin in September 2021 and has had theater experience, including being part of the national tour of The Phantom of the Opera. Sonia also made her Broadway debut as Jasmine in Aladdin and has recently worked on the pre-Broadway lab of The Karate Kid, Sense and Sensibility, and West Side Story in Tokyo, Japan. Guys, it was a party. So I hope you guys enjoy and have as much fun as I did with Michael Malaikel and Sonia Balsara. Congratulations on Aladdin on Broadway. This is amazing. How did you both get involved in the show? Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, I guess I'll just go just because I've been in the show for a little bit longer. So obviously the pandemic happened and all of Broadway shut down. That sucked. But after it became clear that they were going to start reopening theaters, Aladdin was already on stage. They had a full cast. They had the sets and costumes ready to go. And they just needed a new Aladdin and Jasmine. And so I got the audition, which came through my agent. At that time, we weren't even auditioning in person yet because that wasn't safe. So we were doing Zoom auditions. So we were just pretending to fly on a magic carpet over Zoom in my living room and jumping off of buildings.
I feel like I need to see this video. This would be very entertaining.
Oh, man. I think I might still have some of them locked away, but nobody needs to see that. Fast forward, you know, 7 rounds of auditions. They finally brought us in person for like the final rounds for chemistry reads with the Jasmines that they were auditioning. You know, theater is such a energy connected sort of medium that you can't really cast, certainly not like a principal role on a Broadway show over Zoom. Like that's ridiculous. So thankfully we were able to come back into person and get a read for each other. Yeah, it ended up going my way and I made it was my Broadway debut. This was September of 2021. Yeah, I've been with the show now coming up on just over 2.5 years now. So I think I'm just about to cross or just have crossed the 750 show mark.
That's wow. So you're pretending to fly on a rug and through via Zoom somehow worked.
It worked out. Yeah, thank God.
I'll eventually have to try to convince you to show me this. This is amazing. And out of curiosity, pre-COVID, pre-you, were the main leads for Aladdin non-brown people?
It's a good question. So I am the fifth, I think, guy to play the role full-time. We're celebrating the 10-year anniversary next month, which is pretty cool. The short answer to your question is no, they were not brown before. The original guy that originated the role was this awesome guy named Adam Jacobs, sort of an icon in the theater business. He's half Filipino and half white. There was a Asian American gentleman, there was a Latino gentleman, and the one that I think I immediately replaced, he was half Lebanese, I think. Is that right, Sonia?
That sounds right.
So they're like slowly building up.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, you touch on an interesting subject, and I think it was a big issue that I had with the show before I became a part of it was this sort of idea of casting and what it meant to cast a world like Agrabah, which obviously is a fictional world and draws its inspiration and source material from a bunch of different parts of the world. But it seemed like what was missing was a pretty crucial part of the story. And so kudos to Disney as a result of all of the racial conversations that were happening after George Floyd's murder. I think that sort of trickled down through all of the different facets of our industry and people sort of started to realize that like we should reconsider how we're telling these stories. And that's sort of where I got in.
It's reminding me of that story. I did an interview, Sonia, with Cal Penn maybe 2 years ago, and his story about going into a casting call and seeing other actors there wearing brown face for the role. And this was, I don't know, probably early or late 90s or whatever. And this is just reminding me of how much has changed. But Sonia, please go. How did you get involved in the show and tell me how it's been going?
I started temporarily first for a few months in August of 2022. And I came in as a temporary replacement for a couple months, which is, it was so exciting. It was my Broadway debut. I had my three auditions. I had my final callback with Michael. That was when I met Michael. And I really thought I was just going to be there for a couple months. And I was ready to just milk every show for what it was worth. I was like, I'm not going to call it a single show. I'm going to be there and really, really make this last, make this worth it. And then I think it was the second week I was there, I was part of this huge photo shoot. And people were like, you're going to be on billboards and stuff. And I was like, what? Like, that's crazy.
So it's not temporary, right?
Right. So I was like, I don't know. I don't know exactly what's going on. No, but then I ended up getting a very exciting call that I was offered to take over the role starting that January. And I've been in the position ever since. And it's been so much fun. I've loved being part of the show.
This is amazing. So we're going to get into the brown discussion, of course. It's a South Asian podcast, but a little bit about the show itself. I've lived in New York a couple of times. I've seen Broadway many times, but for this show, the beloved story of Aladdin, we all know it. What can people expect from the show that's maybe unique and different from the movies and what we know, besides the fact that there's two leading brown people? And a little bit about the history, if you can just jump into it a little bit.
Sure. So they adapted it for the stage, and I think they did a really great job of expanding on what everyone already loves about the movie, which, it was easily my favorite Disney movie growing up. And he and she, Jasmine and Aladdin, were the brown idols that we all wanted to be when we were kids.
They were our Bollywood stars in a way.
Oh, absolutely. Big time. And the stage play, it's interesting because with a lot of these Disney animated films, a lot gets left on the cutting room floor. You know, there's a lot that they can't make it into the movie for length purposes or content purposes, whatever. And you rarely get to see any of that. But with Aladdin, because they made it into the stage play, they went back to some of the source material and the songs that were written for the movie that never made it in. So, for example, Aladdin sings this song, Proud of Your Boy, which is sort of a little through line through the story that follows his progression into becoming the man that he, you know, hopes to be to make his mom proud. And his mom has died recently, we find out, like in this first line of dialogue in the show. I guess the concept of a dead mom storyline was kind of a downer for the animated film, so that didn't make it in. And the song was already written. Same deal with a few other story plot lines. He was originally supposed to have three sidekicks. They cut those guys and gave him Abu, the monkey, instead, who we love Abu. Sadly, Abu is not in our stage play, but they went back to the source material and brought back his three buddies. You know, little things are different, but all of the big guideposts are still there. You still got this incredible genie, Friend Like Me, Prince Ali, the magic carpet, of course, that sort of steals the show, won the Academy Award for Best Song, A Whole New World. And then, you know, a couple fun new things. Jasmine has a cool new song. Yeah, I think it sort of brings together all of the best bits of the original movie that we all love and then sort of like blows it into Broadway proportions with rhinestones and pyrotechnics and all that stuff. So,
yeah, I'm going to definitely need to bring my kids for sure. Sonia, what about you? How have you put your own spin, if possible, on the character of Jasmine?
So just to jump off of what Michael was saying, Jasmine's song is the only original song. I mean, all of the songs were originally written for the movie, for the animated film. And so the only song that was written fresh for Broadway was Jasmine's solo with her attendants. So that's cool.
Is it a girl power song?
It is. It starts with her sort of dealing with this problem and finding a solution and really working through it and talking to her attendants through it. And in the end, she decides that she's going to run away, that she's going to go out into the world on her own and explore and not ask for permission. One other big change, I think, it's so prominent for me playing it every day, is that Jasmine gets to like lead by the end. In the end of the movie, she just gets Aladdin, but she also gets to, by his side, be an equal partner and get to be an equal ruler with him, which is, I think, a very necessary addition to the story.
I think they should just change the whole thing to Jasmine, the title.
Right?
A little bit more quality.
Throwing it out there, Disney, whenever you guys hear this episode. Just saying, you don't have to give me credit. Just throwing it out there.
I don't know that you really want a street rat running your kingdom. I mean, but it is a really, it's a beautiful moment in the show, and it gets applause and gives me goosebumps every time, just that, it's just like that girl power moment. It's amazing.
And obviously, we have two South Asian leads in a Broadway show. Now, kind of silly question. I'm assuming this hasn't happened before.
It has happened. There was a show back in like 2005 called Bombay Dreams.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess I mean maybe a mainstream story. I don't know. Maybe I'm asking the question wrong, but
it's definitely been a minute.
Yeah.
It's definitely unusual and feels very, very special. And like, I don't take it for granted. And I know that it's, in the time that I've been in the show, to be able to watch these waves of brown people come to Broadway theaters, so many of them for the very first time, finally seeing themselves on stage, and social media, love it or hate it, a lot of them will message us and say like, hey, like it is freaking amazing to see you doing what you're doing out there, whether they want to do it professionally or not, just to have that, to feel like you belong and to feel like your stories are being told and represented on stage is everything. I mean, like I didn't have it growing up. And I think that's a big part of why my career took this kind of winding route that it did take. And I think it's really exciting that some of the younger kids that are in school right now, which there are so many brown kids that are studying musical theater now, the next generation, and so talented, and for them to not even have to imagine what it might be like to be a lead on a Broadway stage, to take the last bow or whatever. It's just like, it's baby steps. We got a long way to go. Don't get me wrong, but I feel excited to be like, you know, some small part of that progress.
You know, we do the same show every day. It can get a little bit monotonous at times, and it surprises you at how in a moment you can find joy. But for me, I come out on a cart, I'm holding a book, and I sort of get to like look out at the audience. That's one of the only times I feel like I really get to take in the faces in the audience. And I always try to see if I can find a little Jasmine out there that I'm like, this show is actually just for you tonight.
You're going to make me cry. I'm a mom right now.
Because it can get overwhelming even to just think that, oh my God, 1700 set of eyes are on me in this costume, in this very like iconic role. Like if you think about it too much, you can go a little like, ah. But if you think about that one little kid who sees himself represented, like Michael said, like they don't have to be aspiring actors even, but to see someone who you relate to or you can connect with on stage that's breaking some sort of barrier, that can inspire someone else to do the same.
100%. It's a really big deal. And I'm going to age myself and call myself an auntie, but I grew up in the 80s. I can't tell you, seeing this transformation in the past 10 years, even earlier, like again, with people like Cal Penn and earlier, I know it's started a while ago, but it feels like, and you guys are in the industry, it feels like it's just growing more rapidly in terms of representation, not just with Broadway, but with films. And I've interviewed so many heads of studios now that are South Asian, and it feels like there's some kind of burst. I'm not sure. Do you guys feel that?
It feels, I don't want to say like exponential, because that might be a little generous, but I do feel like some of it might just be a product of the fact that I think I read a statistic that South Asians are one of the fastest growing minority communities in America, if not the fastest, and have been for a while. And I think there's a lot of disposable income there. And I think ultimately these industries run on money, right? And I think, like, not to be cynical about it, but just sort of pragmatic, I think ultimately the money dictates a lot of the decisions that are made. And obviously viewership and attendance and all of that sort of drives those same factors. But I think, yeah, I agree. I think, like, especially in the TV world, to see what's happening right now is so exciting. I remember anytime any kind of brown folk person was on TV, it'd be like a journalist reporting some hurricane in
some
like
uncle or
my mom
auntie
would be like, come over
back.
Here. Yeah. Come here. Yeah. There's a brown guy.
Oh, there's someone in a like, sari. This is so exciting.
Oh my God. It was like mind blowing. And I still get excited to see that, but it's not the same kind of like, whoa, what dimension are we in?
And
right
then also,
now?
And also watching South Asians on the screen that don't have to do the accent. Like that's, yeah. I know it's just kind of like, okay, we've gotten there, you know? Cause I feel like even as early as 2000, we were all still seeing that, you know? So I'm like, wow, we don't have to do that anymore. We can, but now it feels like, you know, there's more of an option.
That you can be all of it though, right? That you can be the like sexy stud that gets the girl at the end of the day. You can be the like nerdy, awkward weirdo. You can be the ruthless, like, curmudgeonly businessman, like whatever it is, you know, like that, just the idea that we're, because of the shade of our skin, that we might not be capable of experiencing the full range of human, like, it's just, you know, it's progress and these things take time. I get that, but I'm excited.
Yeah, like Dev Patel, how it became a Marvel hero, basically. Right?
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh, that trailer.
Yeah, yeah. Ooh, I was like, what?
So good.
Ooh, huh? I'm headed to South by Southwest in a couple weeks, so hopefully I get to see the movie. Gosh, you guys have been doing this for a while, but if you can think of one highlight or maybe a show or something that's happened during the show that you can share, that's just been like a wow moment for you, for each of you.
This is sort of outside of the show slightly, but last summer I got to perform at the Girl Scout convention with Disney on Broadway.
Fun.
Yeah, no, it was great. And I think our company's amazing, but I'm the only female principal and I don't have any women to sort of look up to in our company to take me under their wing in any capacity. And the men are amazing. I've especially like JC, who plays my father, he's really like, this is, you don't warm up at half hour. You do the, you know, all these like unspoken Broadway rules of things. And Dennis Stowe as well. They've sort of, and honestly, MJ, Michael James Scott, they've all like, they're such veterans. They've been in like 10 plus Broadway shows, but I got to meet some women, Cassie Simmons, who played Nala for like 9 or 10 years, and Caroline Bowman, who's Elsa on the Road right now. And these women who are like leaders.
And that makes a difference.
It makes a huge difference. I was so inspired, and to take up space unapologetically that creates more space for other people, that isn't selfish whatsoever. That was just this incredible lesson for me. And then to do it for 7,000 little Girl Scouts, that was, it was awesome. And I got to be myself singing Jasmine.
Can you
songs,
come to Dallas so. And do this, please? My girls are in Girl Scouts.
Please.
Yes. Actually, I should have had my girls on the interview. They would die knowing I interviewed Jasmine. They'd be like, no. They usually don't think what I'm doing is cool, but this would be very, very cool for them. That's awesome. I mean, men mentors are as important, but when you see women in that space, any space you're in.
Yeah. And I think being a woman and being seen in this way is very vulnerable. And to get to just watch other women navigate that was really, really helpful for me. And then to come back to the show and be like, I got this.
Yeah. All right, Michael, we gave you enough time to think now.
Yeah. As I said earlier, Aladdin sings this song, Proud of Your Boy, through the course of the show. And on opening night, my Broadway debut, my parents were there. My mom was there. And I was certainly like moved more than I was expecting to on that night, just like singing these words, Mom, I will try hard to make you proud of your boy.
How did you not cry?
Still now, like, sort of just like want to lose my shit right now. I think it's nuts. And I think on that night, I had a lot of emotions otherwise, just being responsible for leading a Broadway show for the very first time. It was
no
just
big
it was
deal.
A lot on
no
my mind. So I didn't really let myself dwell in that space for too long because there were 20 other scenes that I had to get to. But last summer, my mom came to see the show. She hadn't seen it for probably a year. And she came back with like this group of 50 people from my hometown. I had to sing that song again for her. And I swear I almost like forgot who I was, what I was doing, like what my lyrics were, in a way that like totally threw me off guard. Cause I obviously like the immediate connection to the lyric and your mom literally being there and all of that was one thing. But then I was just like transported, which happens a lot as you get more comfortable in a show and this autopilot sort of settles in, that your brain sort of like wanders. But in this particular moment, it was just like, man, like you drove me to all those piano lessons and choir practices growing up. And despite knowing very little about what this career might look like and all of your concerns about will you be successful, will you be able to provide for yourself, all of that sort of like washed over me in a way that I just was not prepared for. And that was a moment that I will never forget.
So basically, you're saying moms are awesome. That's what I'm getting out of this. It's all about me at the end of the day.
You hear so many stories about people who get so discouraged by from their parents from following this, not out of disrespect or whatever.
Well, they just don't understand it, right? They don't understand.
It's the fear. Right. It's the unknown, right? It's like you want your kid to be successful and to be happy and to be able to provide for themselves. And this career that doesn't have many people that look like us succeeding, it's like, of course you're going to be terrified of it and unknown. But I think I have to give my mom so much credit for being just like totally trusting in my journey and my like commitment to following this like weird passion that I had, because I think if it weren't for her, I'm just so grateful.
Parental support is key. And especially like you said, our parents, and I'm going to get into your families, but immigrating here, my parents from India, and just having not fight, but, work their way up just to have what we basically need. So to take a different path, to see your kids take a different path. Of course, it's scary. They're like, we just came across the ocean for you guys. And yeah, so I get it. I think fear is a big part of our parents' story, all our parents' story. Okay, I got to ask, because we're South Asian, Bollywood, how has it influenced you, if at all? Would you ever want to work in Bollywood in any way?
Bollywood is like my whole childhood. Okay.
I know. Sometimes I cringe with this, but I was like, I feel like it's so intertwined with a lot of us. So,
I mean, like you have Lagan, which was like the cinematic, that was the creme de la creme. But then
I have Americans poster over like my bed.
We had a book about the making of the movie. And I would just, and then obviously like you have Cubby Cushy Cubby Gum and like my name, every single birthday party, You Are My Sonia was played and I would like hide. There's like action Bollywood and there's so much romance and there's, I don't know, there's Devdas, there's endless, fits every category, I've come up with so many dances as a kid with friends. It was just like a way of like coming together with family for me. It's just, it's like a visceral memory.
Yeah, it is very, very, very much. I know we talked about Bombay Dreams. I never got to see it actually, but do you foresee Broadway incorporating Bollywood more in the future, like in any way?
I think it's actually starting to happen. There are shows that are in development now that are, I mean, there's one that's actually fully, it's the DDLJ movie that's becoming a musical. And I know that that has hopes to move to Broadway.
That was a show on tour, right? Recently, or
no, they did it out in San Diego at the Old Globe in San Diego. So a lot of Broadway shows will develop out of town before they move to New York.
Before New York accepts them.
Yeah, right. I mean, because it's brutal out here. Let's be real in these streets. Yeah, I think, it's Bollywood on paper lends itself super well to the stage, right? It's like they randomly break out into song. It's like that's sort of the same deal. An interesting thing about the Bollywood industry is that the actors all are amazing dancers because that's sort of required of them, but none of them sing. And that's that separation. And I think like that's the interesting gap that comes to play when brown people are starting to audition for a theater, is that combining all three of those aspects together is what's required in this business. And even sometimes we'll get aunties and uncles coming to the show and they'll ask us after having sat through a 2.5 hour play, they're like, were you singing to a soundtrack? Were you lip syncing?
Like, no, we don't understand this.
I'm like, man, I wish I was lip syncing, but no, I got to turn this shit out 8 times a week. Like,
they do not allow that.
So that's like, that's just one qualifying factor. But I think it won't be long before either like a fully fledged, like, Bollywood movie becomes a stage musical or something like very similar happens. Yeah.
Yeah. I did that. Mm-hmm. I did the reading of Come Fall in Love, which was the DDLJ musical.
Oh, and it
was fun. I had to like sing in Punjabi, which I'd never done before, which is sort of, yeah, there was a little bit of Hindi too, but none of the music was the same, which was interesting. And the story was similar, but I would say it's not based on, but more inspired by.
They would have the same songs. Those are the songs that we've all memorized.
You're hoping.
There's got to be like a copyright issue or something. Yeah. I don't know, but
it was crazy to be in the room with Aditya Chopra, just like sitting right there watching all of us. Like,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
He seems like a silent man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, poised and warm. Yeah.
He's kind of totally. Like a badass. So he doesn't need to speak. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been involved in developing another, I don't know that she would call it a Bollywood movie, but Meera Nair, icon of icons, her film Monsoon Wedding has been in the developmental process to become a stage musical. And so I was playing Hemant, the bride, in that for a bunch of their readings and then the production that we did out at the Berklee Repertory Theater in California. And so that's sort of like similarly, you know, bringing in a lot of the Indian influence and the amazing success of the film and then trying to adapt it for this weird medium of stage musicals. It's tough. It's really hard because there are certain conventions in musical theater that just like are expected, and like this certain plot line has to happen, or certain vocal harmonies tend to happen. Like there's always a duet between the love interests. I think like trying to shoehorn an iconic film into a medium that certainly wasn't created with all of us in mind, but then needs certain things to happen for it to be commercially viable, which, coming back to the money idea, is always sort of an important factor to consider. I think it's tough. So we'll see what happens there. But I think it's only a matter of time.
So I'm going to say something, and this is based on no knowledge. I mean, just what I know from a third party objective. It feels like to me, and my next question is about what seems to be a grueling schedule working in Broadway. Just from an outsider's point of view, doing, like you guys mentioned this, however many times a week, over and over again. Michael, you said 750 shows now. It seems like to me, when it comes to artists and creatives, like people that do Broadway can do anything. And not just because you're in front of my face, but like I feel like you guys are the highest on the totem pole. And you don't have to agree with me at all. I'm just saying what I think, because you guys can do it all. There is some kind of magic behind that. You know, you can be humble.
Obviously, it's a very specific skill set. They use the term the triple threat, being able to sing and dance and act. And I think that's certainly a big part of it.
And you guys don't look too bad either, so that helps that. Too. I mean, it's everything. It's like the EGOT in a different way.
There was this interview that sort of like made its rounds on social media of Emma Stone on a red carpet. And she had played Sally Bowles in Cabaret for a while, or a brief time, what was that, 2012 or something like that. And they had asked her, like, would you ever go back to Broadway? And she was like, I don't think I could do it. Like, I really don't think it was the hardest, in her words, she was like, it is the hardest thing I have ever had to do to keep my body healthy, my voice in shape for 8 shows a week. She was like, I've never done anything harder and I don't know that I could ever do it again. And that made its round certainly among the Broadway community, because we were like, listen, yes. This shit's
yeah.
hard.
I mean, Emma Stone is, yeah. If she's saying that, that's something, yes.
Right. And so I think I will say that, like, it's one thing to be able to pull it out and to be like, you know, live really carefully for, you know, if you're filming a movie and you've got like a 3-month shoot or something and you've got to eat really well because you've got like shirtless scenes or whatever, or like there's a lot of combat involved, or you have to live in like a really dark place for a tough character for a while, but then you're done and it's on to the next project. With this, like, you've got to create this level of energy. And it's a, you know, in our scenario, it's a Disney show that's very bright and cheerful
and like
energetic
and yeah.
renowned, beloved. Yeah. And we've got so many people who come to our show and it's their first Broadway show they've ever seen. So you've got to deliver as if it's the first time you've ever done it, even if it's the 600th time you've done it. And so that's its own kind of crazy brain game. So I will say it's been a great skill set to develop.
You can just say I'm right. It's fine.
You're right. Okay, fine. You're right. I'll give you that.
So, Sonia, would you agree to an extent as much as you can?
Anything? I don't think I could do anything, but I definitely feel more confident moving forward that I could tackle pretty hard things because I've tackled this. And it's funny, like, you think you know that, like, I've gone to this mental place where I'm like, do I even know what I'm doing anymore? Because we do it every single day and it's so familiar that it's sometimes too familiar. It's truly like a mental game for me more than anything, because I've like figured out how to have a like be able to go and have fun and still do my show and feel solid, like physically, vocally, all of that. I've like, that's pretty easy for me to do, get a good night's sleep, etc., eat well. But I feel like mentally I have been really stretched, and that I can apply to so much, and I hope that muscle will help me as an actor in the future. like to stay present every day. Yeah. Like Michael and I say the same words and the same gestures every day. So I have to really pretend I've never seen it before. And there are days where I'm like, it's hard, where I'm like, I know exactly what you're about to do.
You again, Michael?
Yeah. But truly there are days where I'm like, oh, and it's a beautiful surprise to find that you're able to be present. Yeah. Yeah.
And somehow like a line will come out of your mouth in a way that you have never said it before. And you're like, whoa, that I want to hold on to that feeling because it changes everything. And I think with Broadway, the reality is that, you know, we've got our principal cast. That's you know, they're all the people that are on the billboards. But I think in the day to day, you know, people get sick, people take little leaves to do other projects, go away for vacations, whatever. And so we've got a whole team of incredible understudies and swings that and standbys that step in and play the roles when people are out. So the reality is at any given day on a Broadway stage, you're not probably seeing the whole cast as they are listed in the program. You're seeing some kind of combination, and it's certainly true with, especially true with long running shows, I think. So I think part of what keeps it fresh is that we have slightly different formulas of the stage picture happening. And so that kind of keeps
it
fresh.
Well, if you need like a Jaiwala to come in, I can walk in on stage one day and just put down some coffee.
Done.
Just
done. I can picture you like right there in the marketplace, whatever. Like buying some spices.
I can juggle. Yeah. I know, mix it up. Yeah, it's pretty amazing work what you guys do. So I guess, and I'm not sure if you would have an answer to this, what does the future hold? How long is this happening? Where can people see it? And then would love to know, if possible, future projects.
For me, this is what's happening right now.
Okay.
We audition and things are always up in the air. But the beauty is that we're in a position, or at least, you know, I'll speak for myself, like I am in a position where I'm in a Broadway show that isn't set to close. Like so many Broadway shows are closing. And it's really hard right now as an actor to get a job and keep a job.
Steady job, yeah.
A steady job. This is like such an anomaly in the industry. And I'm just really, really grateful to be here. But I will say that I really want to do film and television. And yeah, that's a big goal of mine. And that's something I think I could probably even do while staying in the show. That's what I hope for. But for now, it really is just the daily grind. And I'm grateful to be here. Yeah.
Yeah. I echo exactly what she's saying. I mean, I think it's a beautiful thing to get to feel a little bit of comfort and security in a Broadway play, because that is very, very rare. The reality is like, very few shows are lucky enough to run 10 months, let alone 10 years, which is what Aladdin is celebrating this next month. I think there are 12 shows in the history of Broadway that have run for longer than 10 years. So it's...
Do you know what they are? Les Mis, Lion King?
You're putting me on the spot here. Lion King, Mamma Mia, Wicked, Hamilton, Phantom, Chicago.
I'm just testing you.
Ooh. Yeah, I think there are a couple of weird, kind of older, obscure shows.
Wicked,
but anyway, it's very short list, is what I'm saying. Right. And I think like because of that, I've been great to just like sit and feel comfortable for a little, as comfortable as you can feel playing a role like Aladdin, which is just like a ridiculous marathon every time you get out on stage. But I think, yeah, I think I'm excited about trying something new for sure. I think 3 years is a really good long
solid,
while
solid
to sit
training.
In
yes.
something
yes.
And so I'm keeping energy open for something new. I am also a relatively new dad. I have a almost 2-year-old baby girl here at home, and yeah, it's amazing. It's as tasky as it sounds, it's the most incredible role I've gotten to play yet.
It's not. So, I am the cheesiest mom you'll ever meet. My kids are 10 and 7. I'm still showing pictures. And everyone's like, they're not as cute as they used to be. I'm like, I don't care.
No.
These are my kids. And I will tell you,
you will watch
every single piano recital they go to. And I will tell you, and I'll stop talking about the kids, I promise. It really, the auntie comment is true. It goes by so fast. No. And now they have opinions. And I'm like, what? Like, why are you talking back to me? What's happening?
I started this show, this role, without a baby. And now I have this 2-year-old. It's nuts. It's crazy how fast it's flown by. And I think the reality is, like, I'm working at nights. And so I'm not home for bedtime. I'm not home on the weekends. We do these 5-show weekends at Disney, which means we do a Friday night, we do 2 on Saturday, and we do 2 on Sundays. So that's your whole weekend. It's just gone, right? And I have a little bit of a commute. I live out in Connecticut. So it's all that to say, it's tough to raise a family and live on this schedule for a long period of time. So the TV film world is, I've gotten to dip my toes in a little bit, and I'm really excited about getting a little bit more work in that world. And ultimately, you know, we as artists, we go where the work is. And so that's the tough part. And that's what makes my parents a little antsy, is like, what's next? And sometimes you don't have an answer to that, and you have to live comfortably in that. And that's just sort of what it is to be an artist, you know? And yeah, so I think, for now, I'll play Aladdin, and then ask me again in 6 months.
It's amazing what you guys are doing. And like I said, much respect for anyone who can do this on Broadway. So congrats. On a side note, quickly, Michael, I just moved out of Connecticut. Where are you guys?
Oh, we're in Stamford. Oh,
okay. I was in Greenwich for a couple of years.
Oh, nice. Yeah. We live there. My wife teaches at a school in Greenwich, actually.
Oh, cool. So, yeah. We move around a lot. Anyways, that was our last stint, but absolutely. Never thought when I was living in New York in my 20s, I would be like, I want to go to Greenwich. Loved it. I was like, I'm such a mom now. I was like, there's trees and there's kids and it's so nice. And
a backyard.
And a backyard.
Right.
Okay, so just I wanted to get into childhood, but we don't have too much time. So I do want to ask you guys, both of you obviously grew up brown. What is your relationship to being South Asian? Has it always been a positive thing? Has it helped, hindered the career path, how you felt about being South Asian as maybe a child, and has that changed?
So I'm half Indian, half white, and that has been like a beautiful thing and also a bit of a confusing thing for me as a kid, I think, not really knowing exactly where I belong in any given situation. People looking at me and being like, you're something, but like, maybe you're I feel like I was like a walking guessing game for a lot of people. It's weird when your identity is gamified. Like, I feel like that was a lot of my experience growing up. And then I could explain myself and people be like, oh, I see that. Or people will be like, I don't see it. And I'm like, well, it's what I am. You know, I think it's been a reckoning for me to just own who I am and not apologize and not ask for permission. You know, even coming into this role, like there have been, you know, mental blocks of like, am I enough? Am I enough to do this? I have to say, absolutely, I am. And I show up every day and, you know, I carry my ancestors with me. I always like to talk about my grandmother, who I never got to meet. She, in like the 1950s, was an undefeated criminal lawyer.
Is this your mom's side that's Indian or your dad's side?
My dad's side. And he grew up in Bombay. Okay. She was Hindu and married a Parsi. So like, and like, even in, you know, our story, Jasmine's like supposed to have this arranged marriage sort of, and then she's like, bye, I'm going to do what I want. And so that, it just makes me think of like, I mean, it's not even that long ago, like the, you know, 1900s still, but like to defy those odds and to like decide to be a leader in her own right. Like I think all the time about my grandmother and how there's so many parallels.
I love it. Out of curiosity, what language does your dad's side speak?
Hindi, Marathi, and Gujarati.
Okay. So are you guys Gujarati then?
He's mixed. Okay. Like he's Parsi and Hindi. So
very cool. Yeah. And then do you ever get to go back to India at all?
I've been a couple times. Yeah.
Enjoy it? Weird it out? Is it fun? Is it overwhelming?
Love it. Absolutely love it. It's been a minute now, but like I have a lot of cousins out there and aunties and uncles too. So the food is.
Yeah. I was telling Michael, I lived there twice actually, once on my own and once with my husband. So I feel very well connected to India, but I haven't been in a while since I've had kids and just moving around. So taking the kids for the first time this year.
Oh man. Yeah. That is
very,
huge.
Very, wow. Very excited.
I feel like they're at a great age to like, to really get it too, you know?
I was also up until now, I was like, do I really want to fly with them? Like when they're like four, and I was like, no, they don't need to know about culture right now. It's fine. We'll just wait. It's cool.
Yeah, that's big. That's big.
Yeah. What about you, Michael? What about your relationship to being?
We're South Indian. My family is from Kerala. We're Malayali. And my brothers and I were all born in New Jersey. We have this interesting lineage because we're South Indian Catholics, which is a very small but long-standing community in South India, Kerala specifically. Obviously, my name is not a Hindu name, and that confused a lot of people. There were three other Indian people in my high school growing up. But because of that, I was teased a lot, like certain, not really much by my white friends, but by my Indian friends who were like, you're barely Indian. Like you look Indian, but Christian and your name is Michael. Like yeah.
They need to read some more books, basically, is what they need to do.
I mean. Can I direct you to Wikipedia? So it was complicated. I mean, I think I certainly felt the pressure to assimilate, to sort of not make any waves. And I grew up around the time that like Mean Girls came out and Kevin G was this like kind of like comical, ridiculous human being who like was made fun of by all the girls. And just like, you know, I just like that was the touchstone that my white friends had to Indian culture was that it was Apu from The Simpsons. It was all that shit. And so I think, and I didn't have a big Indian community around me. My family, when they first immigrated, were in Dallas. Huge Indian community there.
Oh my God,
there.
I mean, so many of us. just on a side note, my 10-year-old daughter went to a birthday party. The place is called Sixers.
Come on.
You play cricket. It's there. And this was not even a brown girl birthday party. This is one of her white friends. So welcome to Dallas. Sorry, continue. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that was not where I grew up. It was very much like an afterthought in many ways. It was sort of like shove that under the rug and just like do your thing. And it wasn't really until like college when I started to realize like this is a part of my identity. This is something that I have no business disregarding, rather something that I should be really take pride in. And I took a trip. We would go to India every summer growing up. Most of my dad's side of the family, all seven of his sisters and three brothers.
They always have like 18 siblings. I'm like, I don't understand.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's like when I can't name all of my first cousins, you know, something's up. That was very much like, it didn't feel like a holistic experience. It was like, go visit all 400 people and then come home. And it was just exhausting. I'm sort of jealous that you had a chance to live there and experience what that was like, because I think to see yourself as part of a whole rather than this outsider, I think that would be a really interesting experience for my psyche as someone who spent so long sort of disregarding that part of his identity. So I think it's a process. I'm working on it. I certainly want to make sure that my daughter, who is mixed, feels connected to that part of her identity. You know, we're trying to be really conscious about that. But I think in this business, especially, like I grew up thinking I was going to be, well, all kinds of things. But when I came to the professional world, I thought I wanted to be a classical singer, like a Western classical singer, an opera singer, and the very white world. And I think because of that, it was another incentive to sort of like put this other identity of myself on the table and just focus on blending in and creating that manufactured sound that they all sort of love and look to emulate. And I think this was a big push for me into the theater world, was because it was in sort of that post-Hamilton era where the concept of like what stories were worth being told and certainly who deserved to tell those stories was just sort of being flipped on its head. And Hamilton was this huge commercial success. And because of that, all these other shows were starting to, you know, you saw your first Black Glinda in Wicked on Broadway. And like every show was sort of like, oh, wait, we can reconsider the way that we're telling these stories and it still works.
It's still the same story. It's not.
It's more interesting. Yes, yes. It's like, it's even more, it's even richer. Yeah. And I think because of that, I think that's what's giving a lot of the younger POC generation in this business the energy to really see themselves there. It's, you know, comes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's just like, it's just those opportunities. You don't have to dream about them because you can see them, you know, you can literally see them. And that's freaking huge. And I think I finally feel like this is not something that I need to put aside so that I can succeed in this business. I can hold on to it. I can embrace it. I can celebrate it. And that's what brings out who I am. And ultimately, like if you're not being who you are, that sells yourself so short. Yeah. You know,
it's going to affect you eventually. I mean, it's going to catch up, or however you want to put it, eventually. Look, I think, you know, I'm in my 40s and I grew up in Houston, went to UT Austin. I was around South Asians all the time, went to Hindu camps every year, lived in India twice, lived in Bangalore, by the way. I love Bangalore. I still feel like I'm trying to understand my relationship. It changes, I think, over time. It changes as you age. It changes when you have kids. This podcast to me, honestly, guys, I feel like it's a 3-year therapy session. I was like, I think I'm doing this podcast to figure out myself, maybe.
I totally get that. That makes total sense.
Am I doing this for me too much? Do I really want to raise South Asian voices? But it has been a therapy session. And I still, I think it's always going to be a journey. And I think the main thing, I love that you said that, like you hiding that part of you or ignoring a part of you is going to end up hurting you or coming back to you in a different way.
Because people want to connect to the whole. I think that's ultimately what comes across as true and honest and real.
Authentic.
Is like, I want to know everything about you. I want to feel like who I'm meeting is the full picture. And I think I also love with your podcast, I've gotten to listen to a couple of episodes, just like how different everyone's experiences are too. Like, I think it's so important to identify how broad that experience of immigrating, of being the first generation, being the second generation is, how different Sonia and my experiences are, and yet that we're working together every day and feeling the enormous responsibility of representing our culture on stage. Like, I think it's really cool what you're doing. So thank you.
We're not a monolith, right? We are so diverse and there's so many stories. Yeah, it's definitely been an education for sure. Okay, we're going to do a fast fun round. And I'm going to ask you questions about each other. I assume you know each other somewhat well by now. Yeah?
We'll see.
All right. Sonia's like...
I don't think I know like your favorite color.
Sonia's like, like this.
We only get to talk for like maybe 20 seconds during the show.
Okay, that's fine.
So we just wing it.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. Just make something up. It's fine. Whoever wants to answer first. Pet peeves. What's Sonia's pet peeve? What's Michael's pet peeve?
Sonia's pet peeve is fake people.
Cool. Yeah.
Is that right?
Totally.
All right.
I'm just like picturing us at stage door, Michael, and like all of the, like, oh God, it's the pressure.
You're on the right track there for sure. It's people not respecting your humanity.
That got deep.
Oh yeah, sorry.
What's your pet peeve?
Celebrity crush. Who's Sonia's celebrity crush? Celebrity crush.
Sonia's like she's like an actor.
Okay.
So I'm going to say like a Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh.
I would put him on my list.
I mean, I would say Hrithik Roshan, but that's
or that.
It's those 11 fingers.
He's right.
You're a celebrity crush, Michael. Someone elegant and thoughtful.
Besides his wife,
elegant
obviously.
And thoughtful. I know. I'm like, for some reason, I'm like going old school in my mind, like a Grace Kelly type. Or someone who's just like, I don't know, because I know Sarah and she's so like
graceful,
poised and elegant too.
Is that a good one?
That's a good one. My first thought was Tandy Newton.
Okay, nice.
That is.
You guys have interesting answers. All right, I like it. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Who is that?
You know her.
You know her.
We'll explain.
You definitely know her.
Okay.
She's been in a lot. Behind the scenes, and I'm not sure if there's going to be an answer to this, but bloopers. What fun thing has Sonia done on stage that maybe she wasn't supposed to do and vice versa?
So our costumes are beautiful, but they're heavy, bulky. They have like all of this extra fabric. A lot of them made and hand beaded in India. Sonia and I both, I will say before I throw you under the bus here, are both we can be clumsy.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's fine. We've got plenty of strengths, but we can be a little clumsy.
You're not always Grace Kelly.
Let's answer first.
It's fine.
Yeah. No. right. And there have been, I think maybe twice where Sonia has to wear these heels. And the heel has a mind of its own. And sometimes it'll get stuck in a skirt and there might be a little fumble.
Okay.
But she picks right back up and probably no one even notices.
This happened once. And
he said twice, so he was wrong with that.
It was my first week on Broadway and I ate shit center stage.
Like on the ground? Like face on ground?
On the ground. Maybe this will be my Michael blooper too, because Michael just sat there and laughed at me. He just looked and laughed at me.
As soon as I had established that you were okay.
Oh my gosh.
His impulse wasn't to like help me.
Wait, let me get this straight. This was during an actual show?
Well, so this was, okay, this was my first two-show day ever. This is a Saturday, my first week, and it was the matinee. And there's this dance. We do like this. Honestly, it's kind of like the Sangeet of the show. I do my little dance and he does his dance. And then I go up and I like kick my leg and do a twirl. And yeah, I have like this 12-pound skirt and my heel got stuck in it. And I think by that point, I was like, feel like I've done this show 4 times. Like, I'm so confident. And I got stuck and I just fell totally like on all fours.
Can I just say something, Sonia? Honestly, again, having no experience, I am surprised that hasn't happened more. That's insane. Like what you're wearing and heel, like one time. Really? That's amazing.
I do think about it every time I that move. I'm like, don't
fall. I will also say, in Sonia's defense, that we have some of the best dancers on Broadway in our ensemble.
Yeah.
And many of them also eat shit. Not often, but it happens.
I eat shit in my tennis shoes walking, so you're fine. You're doing
just flat ground.
Just for no reason. Nothing is happening, and some wind comes, and I just fall. So you're doing...
That's all it takes.
Yeah, you're doing...
That's all it takes.
I'm very tired a lot, so...
I have had many blunders and bloopers on stage. Sometimes you'll forget a line, I'll forget a lyric.
Okay. So it wasn't laughing at her. That's not your blooper.
Oh, no. This is sort of a spoiler alert and sort of like ruins the magic a little bit, but just for safety reasons, practical reasons, we are harnessed in when we fly on the magic carpet.
Wait, no. You told me on Zoom that you are flying on a carpet for real, so...
It is a very real flying carpet, but for safety, we are clipped into the flying carpet.
Right, of course.
Obviously, you have to unclip from the carpet to get off of the carpet. There was a time that I forgot to unclip. And so I go to just very valiantly and suavely get off the carpet and bring my princess off of the carpet. And I jerk because I'm still stuck to this machine. And that was not my
You just kept the carpet like stuck to your ass. That's good. It's convenient. Yes. It's efficient.
Yeah. Like, let's just do the rest of the show from the carpet.
Can you hop back on? Thanks. Telling you,
I don't think you haven't had too many bloopers that I've experienced. Just maybe like a random. I remember one time in one jump you went like, gotta go, instead of saying, you said some like funny other lyric instead. Yeah.
Talk about something. Talk about, like that.
He was trying to mix it up after 750 shows, I think.
That's it.
He's like, I'm just going to write my own lines now. It's fine. Writers won't care.
No one will know. It's fine.
Okay. Last question, I swear. Who would be the other person's ultimate professional collaboration? Ultimate maybe dream job or someone that they are dying to work with?
Because I could very easily see Sonia on stage or on screen. I would say someone like Jake Gyllenhaal, who has been really successful in both mediums.
Is that a good one, Sonia?
Yeah, okay. Totally. Sure.
Like a Sunday in the Park with George.
That's like my dream show.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Michael, you got that one. I haven't been keeping track of points, but you got that one right.
I would love to see Michael in like a revival of like Carousel or something. Singing those beautiful baritone notes that you were meant to, and being a leading man, and it not having to be like Aladdin. Like, that's what I really want. And then I'm like, ooh, who would be your like perfect opposite? I'm trying to even, and I was also like, it'd be cool to see you do something with someone like Josh Henry. Like, I know he did that. Oh, that would be so cool.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah, I do. I kind of have like an old soul, I will say.
And I feel like Michael's power lies in his stillness, and he doesn't get to do that as Aladdin. And the thing is, Michael's absolutely brilliant and amazing as Aladdin. I just know that his wheelhouse is something entirely different in a way. So, I mean, that just speaks to like his versatility. But like, I just want to see you stand and sing and like make me cry.
I think he has to go back to opera now, I feel like.
just a meshing of the two.
Hey, yeah. I have an idea, Michael. Yeah. Sonia and I will figure out your future for you and just we'll let you know. Don't worry about it. Just chill. Just chill with the baby at home. Yeah. We got you.
I'll be waiting.
Tuckered Out is hosted by me, Ami Tucker. This episode is produced by Genie Media with Genie Saraswathi, Ashley Tuff, Micah Sweetman, Hans Andres, and Laura Radescu. You can follow me at Tuckered Out Podcast on Instagram. And please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast.